Fossil Mind with Dr. Scott Stevenson. This program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES at checkout. Dr. Scott, what's up, man? Good to literally see you. How you doing?
I feel so inferior. I just have like this gray background. You've got the cool. What do you got? Oh, this is your collection of are those velvet paintings?
These are velvet paintings.
Yeah,
these were from my grandmother's house. So when I was a kid, I would go to my grandma's house and I would see these paintings here. There's a third one above it. They were always hanging in like the den or the basement or something, and they reminded me of my grandma. So I have those today, and I actually have my grandma's Afghan here too, which I'm not very hardcore, I guess, but that's
warm and
that's
fuzzy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
We got Grammy power going. Hashtag Grammy power.
And you are in the fortitude bunker, the bunker of fortitude.
Kind of. Yeah. This is, so I've had to remodel the house. This actually used to be where the mold was, so the origin spot of the mold, and the long story that I may have covered before.
Yeah.
I just made this into like a, just calling it a mother-in-law suite. It's like basically like a guest area, the back part of the house. So I'm here while the guys are working the other part of the house. So the dogs have been staying here with me, and it's actually pretty cool. This will be a place where if I want to, I can do a treatment or two with acupuncture.
Oh, nice.
Body work, what have you. Yeah, so it'd be kind of a dual purpose thing. But it's a nice little, if I have guests come in town, I'll be able to do fortitude training camps over there. I'll have a dining area where I can set up a screen and do some presentations. And my home gym is back behind there. So if I want to just like demonstrate exercises, actually, I could even do that.
Nice.
Literally on this if we wanted to, once I get it cleaned out. But that'll be, yeah.
I like that idea. Huh? That could be fun, man. A lot of possibilities here.
Yeah, it's kind of dirty back there, and there's boxes and all sorts of shit. But I'll be able to do all the didactic portions of a fortitude training camp there and then go to a gym locally.
Okay.
So this will be like a spot where I can have like coffee and that kind of thing set up for people. And
that sounds good.
Yeah, it's kind of like a little like mini seminar area if I want it to be.
I'm going to call it the fortitude bunker.
Yeah. But it's also the mother-in-law suite. My mom picked the colors like this. This is like some sort of a peach kind of color. So yeah, it's not like hardcore fortitude training colors. It's very feminine and Floridian.
Yeah.
I like it.
So, I know that Body Power is coming up in about a month now. Dave Crossland's been giving me all sorts of crap that I should be coming out to it. And I would love to, I would really love to. And I really wanted to try to make it happen this year. I just don't see it happening financially at the moment. Like I could do it, but I feel like it would stop me from doing a lot of other things. I would have to invest all into that. So it might not work out for me this time, but I believe you are planning on going this time again.
I think I'm a low man on the totem pole there. They have like lots of big names come in and they take care of those people. They drive them around and that sort of thing. And they have flown me in. At least I think this is my fourth year. I think this is my fourth year going there. They paid my expenses the last couple times.
Okay.
But they wait until the last minute.
Mm.
They contacted me like 6 months ago. Okay. They're doing another sort of seminar. Like they have different sections there. They have a training. They give them different names each time. I can't remember what they called the. They had like a sort of science based area set up. We had all the formal presentations with PowerPoints. That was in like kind of a separate tent, which was actually quite well sound insulated.
Okay.
And that was one section. They had Mike and Leisha Gelside do a, what did they call it? Evolution of Bodybuilding section. That's where Dave and I spoke together. We kind of did a Q&A. Jordan had a death in the family last year. He and I were supposed to do that, Jordan Peters. And Dave just stepped in. So that's where we actually met for the first time.
That's right.
About a year ago. It was pretty cool. And they're doing something. I think they're calling it that, but giving it a new twist.
Okay.
So I will be there. I'm not sure what they want to have me do. And then the folks who run the thing, they're bringing me in to do, there's something they're calling the underground, I think.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a drug-related thing or something. So they want to have me sit on that panel.
Okay.
And then I'm going to do talks. I think last year I did like I get it mixed up. I've done like 6 or 7 talks each time I'm there.
Really?
So yeah, Q and A's. I think I did like 3 formal talks, and then I, various Q and A's. Just kind of step in like a couple times. Like last year, I get them mixed up. Last year, Jordan didn't make it, so I think I stepped in for him on 1 or 2 talks. One we had planned together, and then one he wasn't there, and I had time, so I just went in and did something in his stead. And then maybe the previous year they co-committed him. They basically scheduled him for 2 things at once.
Okay.
At 2 different areas. Like, so I stepped in and did one of those for him. So I just go over there and just work my ass off and have fun talking to and meeting as many people as I can. So
that's cool, man.
That's cool. Yeah. They just put me up at the cheapo hotel. That's like, I just hoof it. I just walk over every time.
Yeah.
You know, I see all like the celebs driving by in the vans, you know, and they get out with the red carpet, and I just kind of walk into the back end. And
there was like some water splashed from the van up on you, but you just keep walking.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm in the rain, you know, trudging along against the wind, you know, the hail, and just hoping to get in there. And they're, you know, coming in with the paparazzi and umbrellas and everything. So
it's
not that bad. It's actually a lot. The people there are wonderful. I really like it. The one problem I run into is sometimes I'll be doing like, you know, let's say 2 talks and I'll have some time in between. I want to watch one in between, and usually there's not a ton of bathrooms.
Oh.
And I have to schedule myself. If I'm going to like, let's say I got to do a talk at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
I got to make sure I leave to go to the bathroom. I just can't run out of there and get to the bathroom and come back because I will get stopped.
Oh,
I can't make it. I will have people like, they will see me. It's impossible to get from one area of the episode back without getting stopped like 5 or 6 times.
And you don't want to be like a dick or something.
No.
You know what I mean? I want
to talk to everyone, but it's like, I'm like, you know, I got to talk in 3 minutes and I got like 4 minutes of walking. Would you excuse me? Like, oh, can I just get a quick picture? I'm like, okay, quick.
Yeah.
So I've run into that before where like, I can't, I'm like, I'm just going to have to hold it because I don't have time to get over and get back if I want to use the bathroom. So, but it's so much fun. It's exhausting, but it's just a blast. The people are great.
See, if I was there, I would bring a Gatorade bottle for you.
There you go.
Then you wouldn't need to go anywhere. You know what? Something I had happen. I just did my blood work, and so I was actually scared to see my labs for a little while. Like I hadn't looked at them in a bit. And I hadn't really been using a lot of stuff either though. I'm in pretty good shape. My hematocrit is a little bit high. I needed to donate some blood. I actually left a voice message with my doctor to ask her if we could set something up. But, outside of that, man, my liver looks good. My kidneys look good. My good cholesterol is a little bit low. I found I was tanking my estrogen though. I didn't realize it. I was tanking my estrogen. So
how low was it?
It was on the scale that goes from 8 to maybe 40, somewhere in there, and mine was a 6.
Okay, that's so pretty low.
Pretty low. With test levels, it was on the range that goes from like 200 to 900, and mine was 1,004. So,
okay.
So good test. My free test was like through the roof. It was like 4 times the norm. Cool. So. Not complaining there, I guess. Estrogen was a little bit low. And I didn't think I was taking too much Arimidex. So I guess I was.
How much were you using?
I was taking, it was 1 milligram. Basically, I was supposed to be doing 2 shots of Sustanon a week. And that was at like about 500 milligrams total. But what I ended up doing, though, I ended up doing about like, what would it be? I ended up taking about 375 milligrams of Sustanon every 5 days is what it ended up coming out to be in reality. And with a milligram of Arimidex every time I took a shot.
Oh, your estrogen was probably varying a good bit. When did you, because there's probably some roller coastering there.
You think though that, will it change that fast? Like,
it's just doing 1 milligram, like once a week.
Yeah. I was just taking it with the shot and that was it.
It can. I mean, the thing that the half lives for so many of those molecules are just from acute studies, and they can change over the time as the enzymes of detoxification upregulate in response to chronic exposure to the drug. So, like an alcoholic who develops tolerance to alcohol, that's because alcohol dehydrogenase and and acetaldehyde dehydrogenase, those enzymes get upregulated. So that happens with drugs too.
Okay.
You develop tolerance to drugs in various ways. So it's possible that you were clearing out the Arimidex, and depending on the timing of when you had your blood drawn, that could be changing your estrogen levels pretty substantially. It's better to space it out.
Yeah. You know, and the plan was to have taken that much sustenon twice as often, twice a week, basically.
But I just
would get lazy with it. And that's why I'm saying like that was the average. And so it had been, it had been about like 4 or 5 days since a shot and about 4 or 5 days since I had taken some, any Arimidex either.
Okay. So that, so then you were pretty low on the,
on the
estrogen. That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's low. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just pulling the Arimidex out. I could tell a little bit. I feel like I wasn't totally 100%. Like really, it was just in libido. Just libido was like a little bit off than normal. Yeah. But, you know, I didn't feel anything different. Like I didn't feel like, oh, dry skin or achy joints, considering it was pretty low. I mean, I've leveled it on purpose before going into a contest, which I'm sure we all have.
Right.
And then you feel it, you know, you're like, oh my God, every joint is aching in my body and my skin hurts to touch and, you know, all that.
Yeah. Did you just get estradiol measured or were you measuring estrone as well?
No, just estradiol. Okay. I saw Victoria pointed out to me a company that called SpectraCell. Are you familiar with them?
I think I've heard of them, yeah.
Okay, I think Serrano uses them. You have to have a prescription to go through them. But when I talk to my doctor, I want to see if she'll sign off on me going through these guys. Because for $150, they have a male hormone panel that covers everything, like down to DHEA and prolactin and all that. It's only $150.
Okay. Yeah, there's a bunch of places that do like bodybuilder panels and those sorts of things too. Yeah. So you can look at the other estrogens.
Okay. Yeah. But what I'm saying is the one I paid for was like almost $200 and it covered all my basic stuff. But that, like it, to get all those things, it would be like in, you know, 300.
Yeah.
Like 300, right 400. And you still wouldn't even get like some of those cool little details that I'd be interested in seeing. So.
So you're like your ALT and your AST was not out of range?
My ALT was... No, they were both normal. They were both both good. Yeah, they're both really good. So,
are you taking some time off from training before you went in?
I took 2 days off. Yeah.
Okay.
Creatinine. Wait, am I saying it right now?
Creatinine.
Creatinine. I always want to say like creatine with an extra syllable.
creatine.
That one. Yeah. Creatine. that was in range and bun was in range. All that stuff was really good. And in the past, that stuff had always been high, but my doctor was always like, well, you are a lifter and it stayed consistent, but now it's like, it's all healthy, like real healthy. So
you kind of would want creatinine to maybe be a little high because that's an indicator of muscle mass. I mean, not that you're looking for it to be sky high, but it would be higher the more muscle mass you have.
But, yeah, I mean, but I'm okay with seeing it.
Just hasn't changed, so there's nothing to worry about.
But, yeah.
Yeah, you see a 260-pound guy with 10% body fat, you're going to expect his creatinine to be high.
Right, and that's where I'd always fallen. But for whatever reason, this time it was in the normal range. And like I said, I took 2 days off. Maybe I did a little cardio the day before and, you know, some mobility-type stuff, but that was it.
The creatinine isn't it's not a function of exercise really. The creatine to creatinine degradation is just spontaneous.
Okay.
It's somewhat temperature dependent, but not so much that like training and elevation of body temperature is going to dramatically impact that, at least that I'm aware of.
Okay.
It just happens at like a rate of like around 2% per day.
Okay.
So yeah, so you've got like body stores of maybe 100 and you might have like 130, 150 grams of creatine total. Most of it in your skeletal muscle and some in other tissue, like your nervous system has it as well.
Yeah.
And about 2% of that creatine will degrade to creatinine.
Okay.
So the more muscle mass you have, the more creatine you have, and the higher the blood creatinine levels you'll have, just from that spontaneous decomposition, you might call it, degradation of creatine to creatinine. And that it's not a function of exercise. Just a function of that's just that molecule does that, just breaks down over time.
What
your body replenishes that endogenously, unless you Or if you're supplementing, you'll have higher levels too.
Okay.
What's that?
What will change? What if through exercise? What are the what are the readings we will see in your lab work that's going to be different due to training?
It's a good question. I mean, if you dehydrated yourself, you can throw off all sorts of things. You can have elevated levels of your electrolytes. Everything can be elevated because you've decreased the blood volume through the dehydration. That will elevate everything to some degree. You can get false positives on ALT and AST. Are we getting viewers online? I see you're looking at your computer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. George White said decisions, and you can post these comments on here, too. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I will say, since you mentioned it, though, first of all, we did get a what's up, Scott, from Kelly, but George says, decisions, watch it now because it's cool, or save it for the dog walk later. We have a good handful of watchers, viewers now. I do want to mention, though, guys, that we aren't taking questions directly right now. We had a couple people that are asking questions. The forum is the place to do that. We're just gonna break some stuff down. Scott's telling us about a little bit about blood work right now. Then we are going to go to the forum. We may be able to take questions here in the future, but the thing is that Scott has a lot of stuff prepared, so we aren't just answering off the fly as much as we've got some.
We can wing it. Okay. I mean, we can. Yeah. I mean, we're like 5 months behind on those questions anyway.
Yeah.
That's another week or two. So the main one that people need to watch out for, bodybuilders, the creatinine will be higher. Tends to be. I get that question all the time.
Yeah.
There are various ways you can get an estimate of glomerular filtration, so that creatinine gets into the blood, and then it's filtered through the glomeruli, which are the first part of the nephron, which is the singular filtration unit of the kidney. And that's just basically a simple filter, essentially.
Yeah.
You've got a special kind of fenestrated capillary, which has little holes in it, like literally like a physical filter. And the creatinine makes its way across that. And if there's some disruption in that filtration, because there's some inflammation in the kidneys, someone who has chronic kidney disease, then you're going to have a backup in that simple filtration, and the creatinine will not make its way out of the blood as easily, and it will back up. Kind of like if you're filtering your pool, getting the muck out of your pool, and your filter's, getting plugged up and clogged up, you're going to have a dirty pool.
Yeah.
So you don't want to have high creatinine levels. But if you have more, you can think of this as a pool too. You can think of the creatinine kind of as the dirt leftover residue of creatine. And if you just happen to have like a lot of muscle mass, like for instance, you've got a lot of dirty kids who like to get in the pool.
Yeah.
Your filter in your pool could be working great, but the kids are always getting in there and getting it dirty. So you're going to see dirty water.
Yeah.
But your filters are fine.
Mm.
It's not a function of that. It's just the fact that you're constantly dirtying the pool.
Yeah.
So that's what elevated creatinine levels can mean in someone who's got a lot of muscle mass.
Hmm.
You don't want to go like way out of range. We're just talking like, 20, 30, maybe 40% above the max range because you have that much muscle mass. The other things are those ALT and AST, which are considered a quote-unquote liver enzymes, but those transaminases are also found in skeletal muscle.
Okay.
Average person does not exercise in a way that causes muscle damage on a repeated basis like we do.
Okay.
So those enzymes would be released when liver cells are undergoing stress and dying off and having to replenish themselves. The liver is replenishes itself really, really well. It's a very, very hardy organ. So liver cells will die due to toxicity that's caused by steroids or some other toxins the liver is trying to process. Those cells die, their contents are released in the bloodstream, and ALT and AST would be higher.
Okay.
ALT especially, like if someone's an alcoholic, you'll see high levels of ALT. but if you've trained the skeletal muscle and damaged it, you'll see higher levels of like CPK, for instance.
Okay.
Phosphokinase, and that would typically be indicative of something that's, if you're just looking at CPK and you haven't done an isoform analysis, because there's muscular and there's cardiac isoforms of that enzyme. If your CPK is high, just generically testing for CPK, that was something you might see in someone who's just had a heart attack. Myocardial infarction, I mean, some part of the myocardial muscle has died off, and those cells are just, they're basically, they've lost their integrity. CPK gets released into the bloodstream, and you have elevated CPK.
Okay.
So you might see high CPK in someone who's done a lot of muscle damage. They use that, creatine kinase is used as a marker of muscle damage in studies of muscle damage. But there's also false positives that can come in ALT and AST because those cell or those enzymes are also found in skeletal muscle. And it can be elevated for 5, 6, even 7 days. Pretty high.
Wow.
Someone's really, yeah. So like literally, like I have a client who just, it's sort of something, I don't even know exactly what it is. He's fine. He doesn't get extraordinarily sore. He's got no other indicators that I'm aware of poor health status. But he just tends to have high, high CPK. Just does.
But
takes time off. It just tends to be high in him.
So the, I guess in a situation like that, what's the answer? Just monitoring him and making sure that it stays where it's at.
That's kind of where we're at. Yeah. I mean, I refer him to a doctor, of course.
Right. Right. Oh yeah.
Check this out. You know, make sure, you know, you haven't had a heart attack. There's nothing going on. You know, does doctor think you have to have an echo? Are you having any heart, angina, heart pain, chest pains? Are you having any palpitations? You know, shortness of breath, any of the, you know, typical signs, radiculopathy or you know, tingling going down your left arm like guys will have. Mm-hmm. any of that kind of stuff. You know, he's none of that. He's just, every time he's done blood work for years, he has high CPK. So.
Is he just wondering, like, is he a really big dude or something? Anything that would, like, yeah?
Yeah, but he's not, I mean, but he's not giant, he's not big Rami size, anything like that.
Okay.
So. Yeah, but just so you want to watch those things. But the creatinine being high, not such a big deal as long as it's stable. That's the main thing is watching changes. If you're healthy and you're good, as far as you know, I mean, this isn't, don't consider this like, you know, blanket medical advice. But if things are a little bit off, like those things which we know can be impacted by having more muscle mass or having exercised in a way that's damaged the muscle, and those are consistent, like your ALT, AST is like, you know, less than twice the upper limit in the blood work for the lab where you get your blood tested. And it's like that most of the time, and you're always kind of getting tested in the same circumstances. Not a huge issue.
Okay.
Now, if you go and get yourself tested after you've come off of everything, and you feel really healthy, and everything goes back, but you're still training, and everything comes back down to normal, well, then you've changed your supplement status. You remove toxins.
Yeah.
And you're just like, for instance, with you, you would train 2 days before. You may have elevated those enzymes due to training, and they may have come back down in 48 hours.
Okay, yeah.
Some people, they won't. They'll always be elevated.
Okay.
Pretty much, unless they wait like 5 or 6 days. But so if you see that you remove something and those change, well, then those are indicative of what you've removed more than likely. If they're staying the same and everything else is the same, your supplementation, what have you, you're probably okay. As far as those two, but
I didn't change anything on purpose. Like I didn't intentionally not train or something. It's just the way life went at that time.
I mean, when people are really concerned, I tell them, you know, take, if you can, take 5 days off and then figure it out, you know, just in case. So what else is things that could be changed? Sometimes people will get, this doesn't really affect us. Most people end up with high hematocrit, high hemoglobin because of gear. Increase red blood cell formation.
I'm wondering if that's because that's what I have. I'm pretty high right now and I need, but when I did the lab work, they took 4 vials. Each vial, 3 vials was 4 ounces, and the 4th vial was 2 ounces. So, I mean, if they took 14 ounces of blood out of my body, do you think that would lower it by a point at least?
Each vial was probably 3 mils.
Oh, 3 milliliters. They're great big vials. I guess because it didn't seem like it would have added up to a pint. But that, okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah, they're like, well, a three mil injection. Yeah,
yeah, that so would make more. That would make more sense. Ounce. That would make more sense. Then, damn it.
Yeah, you've got about 5 liters of blood.
Is that all we have?
Yeah, about your blood volume averages about 5 liters, something like that.
Okay.
So
I was trying to. It was wishful thinking.
Yeah, like if you look like blood, it's interesting, like blood glucose is about 100 milligrams per deciliter. So you add that up, you've got about 5 grams of glucose in your blood total.
Wow.
That's all that's there.
Wow.
And you want to keep that level pretty much in a very narrow range. Yeah. So it's providing blood glucose. Yeah. So there's not much glucose in your blood, and your blood volume is about 5 liters.
Okay.
It takes resting cardiac output. This is a little fun factoids, is about 5 liters per minute.
What does
that
mean?
So if you put a little Ant-Man sized camera on a red blood cell and watch it make its way, it would travel through the heart about once every minute if you're just sitting at rest.
You're kidding.
No, that's about how much your heart's pumping. That's
wow.
A lot.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 5 liters is good. I think it's 3.89 liters in a gallon.
Okay.
So your heart's pumping, you know, you can imagine the flow about every minute, just at rest,
yeah,
is gonna fill a gallon jug. In terms of if you're catching it in a container of some sort. And you know, like a highly trained endurance athlete, max cardiac output can be 6 times that.
Okay.
At VO2 max. Wow. And they're going all out. It's fucking impressive.
I didn't realize that blood flowed that fast.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah.
The heart's fucking badass. The heart is absolutely, it's constantly going.
Yeah.
Constantly. Like, I think it's like about 10, average is 10, maybe it can be higher depending how trained you are. 10% of the volume of cardiac cells is mitochondria. So like skeletal muscle might be like 3-5%, and cardiac muscle it's much more than that.
What does that mean though?
Oh, like so if you look at, well, the cells are going to have obviously interstitial fluid, and they're going to have the contractile proteins, which are a little bit different in cardiac muscle cells compared to skeletal muscle cells. There's smooth muscle cells too, but a large percentage of the volume of those cells are those quote-unquote powerhouses of the cell, which produce ATP aerobically, the mitochondria.
Okay.
So they're constantly going. It's like the epitome of an aerobic machine.
I see.
It's constantly pumping. Like, that's a pretty good workload just at rest.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it can triple or quadruple or even more in someone who's highly trained in terms of its oxygen consumption and its workload.
Hmm.
So you can estimate like myocardial oxygen consumption or workload if you take the heart rate times the blood pressure. They call it the rate pressure product.
Okay.
And this is why blood pressure can be so hard on your heart, because the blood pressure is representative of the afterload. I'm just going into physiology stuff because some people are probably digging this, but it is connected to bodybuilding.
Yeah.
So your heart has to work harder for any given heart rate, the higher your blood pressure is. So if your blood pressure has gone up, let's say 20%, and your heart rate's still, you know, decent, you know, resting of 70 or 72 kind of average, you've got a 20% higher workload in terms of what your heart has to push against, the afterloading of ejecting blood into the circulatory system because of elevated blood pressure. That taxes the heart
that
over
makes
time.
Sense.
It's kind of like, you could think of it, you know, it's not completely analogous, but imagine if you took, you're walking around with your body weight as it currently is, and bodybuilders will get this, and then you just took like 20% of your body weight and threw it in a backpack and went about your daily work.
Yeah.
So now you're a 200-pound guy and you got a 40-pound backpack on your back.
Oh, yeah.
So S2H will get this. You do that all the time.
Yeah.
That when you're tying your shoes, when you're going upstairs, you're moving around. So take someone who's obese, of course, and then they've got high blood pressure on top of that.
Mm.
Your heart has more. You got more weight to carry around, plus the blood pressure is not good for you at all.
Yeah.
So the blood pressure, of course, means there's more driving force, driving lipids and cells, red blood cells, et cetera, into the vascular endothelium, just bouncing and banging up against there, which can cause some of the micro tears, which probably lead to atherosclerotic plaques. So if you're a guy who's got high blood pressure and you've got a shitty lipid profile and you've got a very pro-inflammatory diet, you've got massive increases in the propensity to form atherosclerotic plaques, sclerosis in your heart, of course, and then elsewhere. And eventually one of those plaques can build up and free themselves as a thrombus that'll make its way around and get lodged in your heart and cause a heart attack, go to your brain, stroke. or your lungs, et cetera, deep vein thrombosis.
Yeah.
Your leg. So, yeah, there's some background physiology on blood pressure and blood lipids.
It's stuff, so, man, that I don't always want to honestly think about. I feel like a lot of us in bodybuilding, we want to avoid thinking of anything that could possibly come up that would cause us to have to stop, you know, doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
I know Dave.
It's just nice to know those things. You don't want to be freaked out by them.
Yeah.
But it's nice to know those things and recognize what's going on. Because, yeah, you're right. Like, you know, it's the ostrich approach.
Yeah.
Stick your head in the sand and like, I don't worry about it. I'm good.
Yeah. I remember Dave Palumbo had said that he wouldn't look at his labs like when he was in the middle of stuff, just because he didn't want to know. He was too scared to. He'd look at it afterward when he felt like he was recovering.
Yeah. There's a guy, I don't know anything about his cause of death at all. But there's a guy, a local guy who was, he wasn't older than 35. I did a consult with him. Great guy, fucking loved bodybuilding, and he died like 4 or 5 days ago.
Oh wow!
He's training at the gym here. Yeah, I only see him like on the weekends because he would train late at night, different time than I would.
Okay.
But his memorial is actually next Saturday. I'm going to try to get to it before we record again. But I don't know what happened to him. But you know, you can go at any time, and I don't know how well he was following his blood work, but it's bizarre to die at that young of an age. You know.
Yeah.
Yes, but with the things we're doing, sometimes you got to pay close attention.
Yeah,
knowledge is power, and safety too.
Yeah, no question. I'm gonna run a test in the background here. I'm gonna see if we can actually. I'm wondering if I can actually record this with my audio recorder too. Nope, doesn't look like I can. Never mind. I had a novel idea, but it won't work. What do you say? what do you say? We go to a quick break, and when we come back, tackle some questions.
Let's do it.
I'm going to do a live commercial. How's that sound?
Sweet.
All right. Cause I have, I have some samples right here. True Nutrition products. These are things that so even though they sponsor us now, we don't get free supplements from them. So they sponsor us in the form of a small amount of money. And then I turned around and I used that money to buy some products, including I got these samples, for Victoria. These are, pea protein samples, and they were like $1 something a piece. But we didn't know what
Gemma protein.
What's that?
Gemma protein, as they call it.
What do they call it?
Gemma protein.
Gemma.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah, it probably says that's what they call the pea protein. Probably says it on there.
What does Gemma mean?
I don't know. I was wondering about that. I looked it up. I couldn't figure it out. I'll look right now. See if we can all see. Right.
And I'll,
maybe
and
that's I'll, that's the name of the pea plant or something.
Okay. Well, these say it says pea protein isolate. And we have a few different flavors here. This is like a banana smoothie. We got a strawberry banana shake. We have a French vanilla, which is like the traditional one, right? And the cafe mocha. I've had the cafe mocha team skip before, and I liked that one a lot. So I suggested trying this one. So,
Yeah, that's a good flavor.
I like it. So we'll see. I also picked up what is it called? It's the MPA Muscle Intrusion Intra-Workout Product.
Mm-hmm.
Lemon ice flavor, and I love it. I love it. So
yeah,
tastes delicious. I mixed one scoop with about 20 ounces of water, plus I drank probably about half of one of these while I trained, and it was enough to. So this is I believe a liter and a half. So yeah, that worked out. That worked out pretty good. No stomach upset. Good pump. Used it for my hamstring and glute day yesterday, and it was good.
So. What flavor of the MPA did you get?
I think they only have one. It's like lemon ice.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's pretty tasty. You've used that before?
Yeah. I'm trying to think if they may have changed it here. I'm looking at the ingredients. It looks like it just got, what's in there?
Highly branched cyclic dextrin and amino acids. And some minerals. What is it? Calcium and potassium, sodium.
Didn't he have a glucose disposal agent in there at one point in time?
Oh, really?
Maybe not.
Huh.
Yeah, the agmatine's in there still.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's – I thought it did. I didn't want to say it if they didn't. So you've got to watch out for the agmatine. I drink gigantic. This is just like my public – I've told Matt about this, actually. I think I mentioned the Dante, too. So agmatine doesn't do well with yohimbine.
Oh, really? Why is that?
We said, they both – They both compete at the alpha 2 adrenergic agonist.
Okay.
So yohimbine is an inhibitor of it, and agmatine activates it to some degree. And I tried to just use some of the muscle intrusion like as my main ingredient in an intro workout that was going to be like 1,200 calories or something like that. It was a pretty big one.
Yeah.
So what's a dose of this stuff? This isn't like a negative, just a, like a be careful.
Yeah.
So one dose is like 104 calories. So I was using, I used like whatever, like 10 doses.
Oh my God.
I just like loaded up because it's like 25, 26 grams of carbs. I can't see they don't even list the, that's weird. Okay. This is bizarre. This is one of those weird things as a side note. So I'm looking at the supplement facts. Total grams of carbs is 26.
Right.
Well, 4 calories per gram of carbs would be 104 calories. So they list that as total calories 104. They've also got a proprietary blend of those
amino acids. Yeah.
And they also include creatine in there and agmatine.
Okay. In that proprietary blend?
In that, and it's a 13.4 gram proprietary blend.
Okay.
Now, I don't know how much of that is creatine versus the other amino acids, but I'm guessing they don't have to list those in order of amount in the proprietary blend. They can put them in whatever order they want to.
Yeah, I would
imagine.
There's
probably some calories in there.
You would think. If those,
yes.
You would think.
That's kind of the point. They have, like, substantial amounts of those amino acids. So, but they don't list that in the calories. The calories is still 104, which is just the calories from the carbs. The calories from those amino acids are not listed.
Yeah,
I see that sometimes.
Yeah, I've seen that too. I am adding about 12 grams of protein from PeptoPro along with that.
Okay,
so I'm not just using just this straight. And then, so that, and it seems to be working good. I had ordered True Nutrition's just pure highly branched cyclic dextrin back when it first got real popular, and just on its own. And the plain stuff, I'm gonna tell you, I would never want to drink that again. It was like drinking aspirin, like just taking a big cup of aspirin powder and dumping it in some water. Yeah. Oh my God, that was the worst. Yeah.
I actually have like a 10-pound bag of that stuff. I don't care.
You don't care? how much water do you mix with it? You're probably using larger amounts. I'm using one scoop. If I want to go higher, I've got some carbo load. I'll add that to it. But for now, 25 grams is fine.
Yeah. No, I will do. I mean, I like at that time when I was using the muscle intrusion, I was doing like 1,000 calorie intra workout, something like that.
Wow.
And
wow.
So, but the thing was back to that. I was using yohimbine at that time as well. And I think it was just starting my diet. So I was just adding those in, but I hadn't brought my calories down. I always keep my intra large.
Yeah.
So I was basically using an off season level intra workout that I built up to. And I had that, and it was like, you have those workouts when you're deep in prep, like the last couple of weeks where you're just like, motherfucker, I feel awful.
Oh yeah.
Just, I don't know that I can like, I don't even want to think about trying to train anymore, but I have to do this. It was one of the hardest workouts of my life.
You're kidding.
And I had no reason for it to be hard. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? Why did I feel so awful?
Yeah.
And it was the agmatine. I tried it again with that, and then I may even like made two shakes, and then I switch or something like that. But yeah, so the agmatine and the hembine don't do well together. And that would probably go for Rawolskine.
Okay.
Which is also an alpha 2 adrenergic antagonist, like yohimbine is. So you want to be careful mixing agmatine and yohimbine.
I never knew that.
And probably if I had done like a scoop or two, I'd been fine. I think I may have thrown that out, but I had a whole bunch of it. I'm like, I could probably use like one scoop with yohimbine and be okay, but don't try to do like six scoops or whatever, because you'll get it's dosed for like. What a normal effective clinical dose of agmatine would be.
Yeah.
And I did whatever 6 or 10 times that. So.
Okay.
You got to watch that with those. So if you're going to use the muscle intrusion, you refer to it, talk to those guys, Carl or Dante or Matt, and see what they think. But maybe use like one scoop of that to get the creatine and the agmatine that's in there. And then maybe use another source of protein and carbs, like you're saying, in order to bump up the calories. Cause otherwise you're going to dose the heck out of yourself as far as agmatine, which might not be the best thing. So
Or like right now with me, I'm using the one scoop, and I'm not using anything else, but I'm doing good with it. I liked it. I like the flavor. So guys, you could use our code advices at checkout for additional savings. I just pulled up look at this. You probably can't see this, Scott. I think I'm gonna pull this up right here. Oh, wait, it comes up real
Let's
small.
see.
It comes up real small on the screen. Let's see if I can resize this. I've got it right between us right now. If you look at if you look if you saw you probably can't
Oh,
see
I'll
it.
have to go to Facebook.
Yep, if you go to Facebook right now, you can see the cover for Dr. Scott Stevenson's Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach. And you guys can order that. If you're in the US and you want to get the hardcover, it's available at Amazon.com. Just check it out, Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach. It says, it's not available or limited stock or whatever. They print it on demand. I know people were having 2, 3 week wait times when it first came out. I got it in about 3 days from the time I ordered it. You can also go to Barnes and Noble if you want to check it out internationally and get the hardcover. Or, of course, you can go to BYOBBcoach.com, and that is where you can download the ebook. You see what I got
That's
going
good.
on
Yeah,
there?
I had to go on my phone. I had to go on my phone and look it up. That's cool.
Yeah, so that's available, guys. You can check that out. Of course, fortitudetraining.net for Dr. Scott's training plans. So, I'm excited to see what we can do with this technology. Do you want to take an actual break where you could get up, get some water, use a restroom, anything like that before we get
I'm
started?
good, man.
Okay.
I'm good. Yeah.
Well, in that case, let's do what we do here. I'm going to pull up the questions.
Right. Let's do it.
So,
Find them too.
let's see. We've got people that are asking questions here. And they are asking questions on our feed right
That's
now.
normal, though.
Yeah, and I would love to be able to answer them, but I do want to tell you guys, we would love to answer your questions, and here's what we normally do with this show. Usually I pick Scott's brain about stuff and ask him what's going on with life and all that. But then we take questions, and the
Check it out,
questions
Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach.
I hear me. Then we take questions from our forum, and the forum is, if you go to advicesradio.com, or you can just there's a button there to click on the forum, or you can go to forum.advicesradio.com, and in the bodybuilding section there are threads for all the shows that are stickied at the top, and we are in the Muscle Minds thread. The next question is from White Ox, and he says, could you talk on androgen receptor sensitivity versus density and what impact this has on progress and response, and how could we manipulate it to our advantage? Could L-carnitine, L-tartrate be helpful in this scenario, as there's some evidence saying it increases androgen receptor density? If so, how would you implement it for a competitor that blasts and cruises? More beneficial to using it during blasts or cruises? So first of all, what supplements are we talking about here, Scott?
It's just talking about L-carnitine. I mean, that's a more bioavailable form
Okay.
when it's the L-carnitine, L-tartrate.
Okay.
And I mean, people inject L-carnitine, obviously, for the fat loss property. So L-carnitine's fascinating stuff. It's the thing that people don't actually. So you can inject L-carnitine, and or you can take it orally over time. L-carnitine's found in meat, and interestingly, just like creatine. Insulin increases its uptake. So people will use carbohydrates, or people who are injecting it, who are also injecting insulin, will co-inject those things to increase L-carnitine uptake. And muscle contractions also increase L-carnitine uptake in the skeletal muscle. The same thing holds true for creatine. So carnitine is part of a carnitine palmitoyl transferase, part of the enzyme that moves fatty acids from the outside of the mitochondria into the mitochondria for beta oxidation and use as fuel. So orally, if you take it, I think like 3 to 5 grams, something like that, a day, ideally with carbs or peri or intra-workout, you can actually increase the extent to which you'll oxidize fats. Seems to help a little bit with fat loss. especially if people are on a hypocaloric diet. So it's going to shift your energy use towards fats. So you're oxidizing more fat, and it definitely does so during exercise. It can even have a performance enhancing effect.
Okay.
Paul Greenhalgh's lab, Stephens, S-T-E-P-H-E-N-S is the first name, first author on a lot of these studies. Greenhalgh did some of the early creatine stuff back in the day.
Okay.
So they demonstrated this. All the early carnitine research was just for shit. It didn't seem to do anything. Hmm. But they didn't give it enough time.
Okay.
With Stevens, they did some metabolic studies looking at uptake, the effect of insulin and contraction. They kind of teased out what actually has been done with creatine and figured out that those things I just mentioned hold true in terms of increasing uptake. And then they used oral supplementation to show an effect on fatty acid oxidation, performance, what have you. So that's why people now will use, they'll just bypass the absorption issues, not worry about what form they're taking, just inject it.
Gotcha.
And they'll do it pre-workout and use insulin and carbs too. So there's just like one study with rats showing that they prevented a downregulation in androgen receptor density when they stressed them out with, like, I think it was chronic treadmill training or something like that.
Hmm.
So here's the interesting thing. So and I got asked this question actually on the Mind Pump episode, and it's kind of like, oh, God, where do you even start here? But this was like at the tail end of our interview.
And I haven't seen that. I still haven't seen that yet either, have you? Have you talked to them at all about when that's going to be released?
Yeah, it has come out as far as I know.
Okay.
No.
They must be deep. They must have a bunch of stuff stocked up.
Oh, yeah. They're constantly filming there, I think, like probably every day.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you, though.
No, it's all good. So it's kind of fascinating because there's really a relative paucity, I would say, a lack of understanding of mechanisms of action for androgens.
Hmm.
So typically, one thing you'll see with steroid administration is an increase in the androgen receptor density.
Okay.
So like there's a sort of the simplistic notion would be that the strength of an androgen of the signaling brought on by androgens is just a function of the androgen receptor density. And if you're going to have a desensitization because you're using super physiological levels of testosterone or you're taking gear or what have you, I'll switch you back here to that. That would mean that you have a reduction in androgen receptor density. That's the like easiest way to desensitize the cell to androgens is just decrease the androgen receptor density. Fewer androgen receptors, less signaling. But it doesn't happen that way.
Okay.
So the other thing that's kind of interesting, and I've talked about this on other we may have talked about this here before, and I did podcast with Jake Campbell, and the one with Carl Lenore was all about this, actually, on Superhuman Radio, was that another mechanism whereby androgen receptor signaling can happen is when an androgen is complex to serum hormone binding globulin, also holds true for estrogen, and it binds to the megalin receptor, as it's known, and that complex then is endocytosed, brought inside the cell, and then goes about its business.
Okay.
So when they have like animal models where they've deleted like a transgenic animal, they've deleted the megalin receptor, and those animals don't have normal sexual development.
Hmm.
So something about androgen receptor signaling happens there. And then we know like orals friggin' work, right? Those orals, but women will use lots of orals and they obviously work for them. Well, the binding affinity of oral steroids in large part to the androgen receptor is zilch.
Hmm.
But I've talked about these transduction studies where they will couple together with the places where you'll see the genes that are turned on by androgens. So there's androgen response elements where you would see that an androgen coupled with, there's actually two pieces of the androgen receptor come together, would bind there and turn on the androgen receptor at these androgen response elements, and they can couple together. They can actually create these really cool cellular models where they've put in I think it's called luciferase. They put in like a luminescing molecule transcribe along with the genes that are involved with androgen receptor expression or androgen receptor signaling. So if you've turned on those antigen response elements, you've turned on the things that antigens do in the cell genetically
right.
to express the proteins they do, you get a cell that glows.
Yeah.
You get a marker that you've turned on the antigen response element, so you're doing the antigen receptor things. And D-ball and Winstrol orals will do those things.
Yeah.
But they don't bind the antigen receptor for shit. So what's going on there? There's also, so the antigen receptor is, the classical one is in, it's floating around inside the cell. So antigens are lipids. They're steroid molecules. It's kind of lipid. So they're lipid soluble. They can just float across the cell membrane. And the classic idea is the antigen, you know, steroid molecule looks kind of like cholesterol, makes its way, and the two pieces of the antigen receptor kind of come together, and then they make their way into the nucleus. And they do their business. But there also are antigen receptors that are tied, for instance, to G proteins, which mean they have a very, very fast response time. And you find those like in neurons. And I think some of the cells in the testes as well. I don't know if they found them in muscle cells yet. They may have, and maybe I just haven't found the research. So there's also other ways in which antigens can impact, like maybe a different, I don't even know if it's been characterized, how these antigen receptors differ, the ones that are on the cell membrane that have a rapid response time compared to the ones that are the classical slow response time, genetic or genomic signaling. So they're acting right on the gene. So there's antigens that can have an immediate effect. That's why people will use stuff like Superdrol or Anadrol pre-workout or Halo, because you feel it right away.
Right.
That's not a function of the antigen making its way into the cell and turning on genes. That's a long process. That takes a while, hours.
Okay.
Talking, you take, you know, someone takes a, you know, 100, 150 milligrams of Anadrol, and you can't spell asshole without Anadrol. They're an asshole in a matter of a half an hour.
Yeah, yeah. And a strong one at that.
Exactly. So there's that going on. So back to the question at hand, in this particular study where antigen receptors, the downregulation or reduction in density, which people use the word upregulation and downregulation sort of kind of haphazardly. The origin of those terms is best I know. I'm not a geneticist, I'm not a gene jockey, but the origin of those terms really refer to something that's going on in terms of gene transcription and translation. So you transcribe a gene, you get a messenger RNA, and then it's translated into a protein. It can be a very complex process. So the upregulation really refers to what's going on in that gene transcription process where you're making a messenger RNA. There's all sorts of things that could happen to that messenger RNA. Such that less of it gets translated, or even the protein gets degraded more. So all sorts of things could happen before the actual protein itself would actually be fully formed, you know, take on its three-dimensional shape, et cetera, that has nothing to do with true genetic up or down regulation. So how much antigens receptors you have in a cell, and actually where they're located, whether they're on the surface of the cell in the plasma membrane or the ones that are floating around, may have nothing to do with actually what's going on genetically in terms of gene transcription in that way. So it may not be an up or down regulation. It could be all – there's all sorts – and none of this has been characterized that I know of. And the thing is, we know that you have normal feedback inhibition. You it's not like the more antigens you take, the more sensitive you get to them.
Right.
That would be like a, you know, a positive feedback loop.
Right.
The more you take, eventually you get a lesser response. But at least within some dose range, a lot of this is kind of in the cell culture types of things. In vitro, you're seeing an upregulation of antigen receptors.
Yeah.
So more antigen receptors, but the signaling is going down. So that's a post-receptor phenomenon of some sort, and I don't know where it's going on or how it's happening. And it could be, I mean, also if you got a cell that's growing, as antigens will make muscle cells do, you've got things like myostatin that are at play and what have you. So what's going on with the antigen receptor, you know, being that it tends to go up when you use more gear, it isn't necessarily like the place where you want to target to make gear more effective. It's probably something that has something to do with something other than the androgen receptor density, because that doesn't even go the direction you would expect. If the more gear you use, the lower your androgen receptor density went, and the more gear you use, less sensitive you become. Well, then it would make sense. Let's do everything we can to keep the androgen receptors high. But they tend to go up. So in a way, it's like maybe if you're going to use some sort of logic, it would actually be good to see them go down, because that's the opposite of what typically happens when you lose sensitivity to having used gear. I'm being facetious.
Yeah.
Here, but you get my point. So as far as the L-carnitine goes, there's only that one study that I know of that was in rats, and I don't know how well that really pertains to us. And the other thing that happens with L-carnitine, too, is it actually desensitizes you to thyroid hormone.
Mm.
One of the things they'll do sometimes to people who are who've got taken too much thyroid, or they're having a quote-unquote thyroid storm, is they'll administer them L-carnitine, because it will impact. I think it affects like thyroid entry into the nucleus, so it basically prevents thyroid from going in and doing the things it does in terms of turning on genes.
Oh wow!
You got to watch out with L-carnitine, using it too much. You can get that increased fat oxidation effect, but it also has a hormonal effect on how well thyroid works. So you can basically you could be euthyroid in terms of blood work, but have hypothyroid symptoms because you're using L-carnitine.
Huh. So you may still have the normal levels you would expect, but those hormones aren't going to be working as effectively for you, you're saying?
Right.
Okay, interesting.
And I don't know that I've never seen this like looked at systematically to see what happens, because I don't even know if that happens, for instance, in the thyroid gland, where you'd be having that feedback inhibition.
Yeah.
It could be that if you're using L-carnitine, I'm going to just speculate here because we like to have fun on the show and just like toss out wild ass guesses. WAG theory, one of my professors used to call it. This is a wild ass guess theory, but who knows?
Okay.
So it could be like if you're using L-carnitine and now you're limiting entry of thyroid into the nucleus in the thyroid producing cells, the thyrotrophic cells of the thyroid, that could be basically bringing about in those cells a signal that suggests, we're low on thyroid.
Yeah.
So it could be affecting the degree to which thyroid stimulating hormone works. It could be affecting the hypothalamus. You could be kind of limiting thyroid activity. So you could be throwing off your thyroid hormone axis.
Yeah.
In a way that could be doing all sorts of things. You've got an effect on the skeletal muscle and the other target tissues of thyroid, and you're also kind of throwing your thyroid hormonal axis out of whack at the same time, and maybe those don't match. I don't know exactly what happens.
So it's not just an innocuous thing, then. It's not just you could so watch out for this. I mean, because I know a lot of people who just think, well, it's just L-carnitine. I'll just inject a bunch of it every day. And I know John Meadows said that it does good stuff. It'll slam some insulin with that. But it could, so watch out, basically. Have you heard of anybody having issues in that way with thyroid?
Most people are also using thyroid hormones, so at the same time, L-carnitine. Okay. So it's one of those things where if you start to sense that there's some like temperature, like morning temperature is not as high as it should be, those typical things that might indicate you're having a hypothyroid issue, it could be from the L-carnitine.
Okay.
And literally, people are in an emergency state where they're in what's called thyroid storm. You can like Google this or go to Google Scholar and type in carnitine and thyroid storm. That's like an emergency treatment for someone who's got too much thyroid, who's in a hyperthyroid crisis.
Hmm.
They'll inject them with L-carnitine because that will block, they'll basically block the action of that excess thyroid hormone.
Hmm. Thyroid storm. I feel like I want to go in that like 2 weeks out from a show and just just dice down.
Right.
Time to trigger the thyroid storm.
That would be like X-Men character. I am Thyroid Storm, and then when they touch you, you just all your fat melts away.
I like that. Yeah.
Go see them like on the mountain, on Mount, you know, fat dissolving, and it would just touch you, and you become shredded.
And bros would know you'd have to be on AAS, otherwise you would lose all your muscle too, right?
Right. Yes, absolutely. It did affect everything. You just shrink. You just wither up. It's like, oh. You weren't geared up, brother. No wonder.
right.
You're doing men's physique, no bodybuilding for you.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about our next question, and the reason I'm excited is because I have I have a graph that you sent me that I can put up for it. So this will be our
Oh,
first of,
yeah.
besides us just looking pretty here on
Figure, not really graph so much, but yes.
Oh, okay. I haven't looked at it yet. I had pictures. I have a picture here to put up with this next one. So besides us looking pretty, this will be our first opportunity to really use the video technology that we have set up here. This is from Langstrom One, longtime supporter of Advices. I just sent him out a shirt. I'm not sure when it'll get there. I have tracking information for you, Langstrom. If it doesn't show up in the next week or so, he's overseas. He says, "Hey guys, so recently I saw a study done on absorption of whole peanuts, peanut oils, and peanut butter. I could not access the whole study. However, Jorn, do you know who that is? So an
Jorn
Instagrammer."
Tromelin.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, he's
All.
pretty active on social media. He's a good guy.
Okay. He
Yep.
has it all one world
He's got a
word
good
here. So that,
Instagram.
yeah, that must be his Instagram handle. It's all one word,
Yep.
Jorntromelen. On Instagram, gave a short review in a recent post. He wrote that peanuts are hard to digest and therefore not all the nutrients are being absorbed by the body. As much as 78 calories per 100 of peanuts were not absorbed and was excreted. I suppose this means that the net calories of peanuts, according to the study, is 567 minus 78, so 489 calories per 100 grams. What are your thoughts on this, Dr. Scott? Does this hold merit? And if so, have you seen this with any other foods as well? Thanks. And Scott, you just let me know when you want me to put up this figure, and we will put up the figure.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I actually have the study.
Okay.
I think I had to buy this one. I think I cite this in your might be your own bodybuilding coach. This is actually something that I will do with people to cut back their calories, sort of in a way that they don't even know is happening. You can put the figure up now. It's figure one from the references he cites. It's Levine from like 1990 or something like that.
Launch the figure.
Levina and Silvis.
Okay.
Pretty cool. It's just a short little study. Did the figure go up there?
The figure, we launched the
Okay, cool.
figure.
I'm getting. I can't see our live because it's just sort of stalling out. But I've got the figure here in front of me. So that's basically showing what they did. They had. It looks like it was a nasty diet. 10 people were assigned to a vegetarian diet that contained a total of 80 grams of fat per day. 76 grams was in the form of whole peanuts, peanut butter, or peanut oil. So
Wow.
they basically split their subjects up, and almost all their fat, 76 out of 80 grams, came from one form, either the whole peanuts, the peanut butter,
Yeah.
so the creamy, or just peanut oil. And the rest of the diet was just like just a vegetarian. So no meats, no nothing. Sounds just awful. And they looked at the percent dietary fat excreted per day. And with peanuts, it was like, I'm looking just looking at the graph. It was about 17%. They have a table there too. And with peanut butter, it was more like 7%.
Okay.
And peanut oil is about 4.5%. So they actually did have two conditions. They had a high fiber and a low fiber to see if the fiber was what was going on there. So one of the things is that the idea here is that one, peanuts, if you can't really chew them entirely. I mean, you can actually just chew and chew and chew and eventually break them down to where they're creamy. But everyone knows that peanuts will make their way through your poop. Like that'll show up as just totally not fully digestible, right?
I knew that was coming. I wasn't going to
Yeah,
say it
I mean,
myself.
you want it's a great way to check your transit time. Like corn is one thing and peanuts are another. Like if you want to know how fast things move through you, if you got maybe a slow transit time, you can figure that out pretty simply. You're just going to have to pay attention to what's in the toilet. So with the whole peanuts, I mean, they're doing a stool analysis, and they had substantially larger percent of the fat being lost. In fact, it was pretty substantial. They even called it it was sort of a steatorrhea, like what you might at that percentage of fat not being absorbed, that would be considered steatorrhea, I guess technically. Not so much in this particular situation because people wouldn't be taking in almost all their fat from peanuts. But if you saw someone with that much fat in their stool, that would be considered sort of a pathologic. Normally you shouldn't like see like fat droplets in your stool.
Right.
If you do, you're having malabsorption, you've got some sort of issue. Probably could be very well in your pancreas with lipase production, that sort of thing, or could be bile issue.
Okay.
You know, emulsifying the fats properly. So be a bunch of things, but that's not a good thing when you've got fat droplets in your stool. So, the peanuts just weren't fully, the fats weren't fully absorbed. Okay. And that's kind of the idea. So he took some of the numbers he actually read. I went to Jorn's, Instagram, and that value that he came up with that he included in his question, what was it? 78 calories per 100 grams of peanuts were not absorbed. Yeah, so that it does. It cuts down the number of calories in peanuts somewhat. Huh. So not a huge thing, but if someone like is you know, eating like 2 or 3 tablespoons of peanut butter a day,
yeah,
let's add up.
Yeah,
you know, you can just have them switch to peanuts, and it'll help. It can help with bowel movements a little bit too, because that stuff creates some matter for their stool.
Yeah.
And it'll cut down the calories a little bit as well. So this is kind of a cool study. They don't even like know in the study like that peanuts really technically aren't nuts. They're legumes. Nuts grow on trees and peanuts grow underground. But the last sentence here, they say, since nuts represent an important source of energy, they can supply fat and protein to vegetarians who do not consume eggs or dairy. Products. Upon Upton Sinclair's suggestion that nature will castigate those who don't masticate may hold some truth. Yeah. Upton Sinclair was an author of, wrote about 100 years ago about lots of things related to food. He wrote the book called The Jungle.
Okay.
Which was an insight into Polish workers in the meat industry in Chicago.
Really?
Yeah. He didn't intend to do this, but he ended up completely revolutionizing some of the legislature around meats being kept clean.
Oh, really?
And processing. Yeah, like, you know, hear people talk about, I wrote a report about this when I was in junior high or something like that. And
of course you did.
I know, and I still remember for whatever reason. But yeah, they like, you hear about like all the, like, there's actually like a legal limit of like insect parts and all sorts of like basically really, really foreign things that shouldn't be in meat.
And like hot dogs, you can have 6 hot fly dogs, legs, yeah, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they used to do some pretty nasty stuff. Like, he described this just as part of describing the working conditions of these Polish immigrants, just to characterize their life moving from Poland to Chicago. Many of them worked in the meat packing industry. And in doing so, he wanted to talk about their working conditions. And he talked about like the fact that they'd have all this meat, and it's really disgusting, but they had meat, and the shavings of the meat would all be kind of washed into a hole, and they would use that and make meat products out of it. It was just, it's much worse than what I just described.
Yeah.
So anyway, he was, that's why they quote him, I think, because he was a pretty well-known author, and he had a pretty strong impact on legislature as far as meat goes. I know that much.
Huh.
So
it was, I remember, you know what it kind of reminds me of too, talking about like eating these, well, thinking of peanut butter first of all, was I know that there was that, did you see that product that came out this past year? It was peanut butter with like basically fat blockers and carb blockers added to it. And so they said it was 0 calorie peanut butter because you weren't going to absorb any of it. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I like that's like so. What was the name of that fake fat, Olestra, that used to give people the runs? Remember that?
Is that what they put in chips?
And yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Terrible. People just be like literally, they'd get anal leakage. You know, you just, you can't go anywhere because, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, the stuff just runs out of you.
I wonder,
But yeah, that's crazy.
could you use that Alestra with like other like eat a, like say like I'm going to eat this bag of chips to offset this double cheeseburger that I'm also going to consume at the same time.
I think the Alestra was just a fake fat.
So it didn't affect fats. It was just a,
No,
okay, I see. I see.
yeah, it did, but I don't know what they had in there. Like that's pretty crazy. Because then whatever you got in there, it's gonna be coming out the other end. And when you have food malabsorption, it's not pretty.
God no.
Like
God
that's
no.
yeah, and I mean, God, I can't even imagine that what that does to your microbiome. Because that like that's one of the issues, like with beans and gas. You know, the fact that beans aren't fully digestible, that's why people use Beano, is because that gets down to your microbiome and those bacteria have their way with them and they produce all the gas and give you issues, you know? So like imagine if you're like literally letting all like if it literally does that, I can't imagine it's all of it, but if nothing's absorbed and you're just basically just feeding like food that's essentially it hasn't been broken down into the bacteria of your gut. I mean,
So,
who knows? Maybe the people are okay with it, but I can't imagine it being good for your microbiome at all.
yeah, I ate that peanut butter. I had been given a jar of it, and I didn't notice anything different than in any regular peanut butter. My digestion was fine, and I even the first day I tried a couple spoons of it, and then the second day I was like, I'm going to eat all my fat source from this peanut butter. Nothing happened weird. I did want to ask you though. So if now you eat peanuts. They obviously, like we're saying, they don't break down completely, so we're not going to get all the calories from them. I guess the same would have to, would that be true with almonds as well then? Other.
That was his question. I haven't seen that with almonds. It would make sense. I mean, peanuts and almonds are actually peanuts aren't really nuts, but yeah, it would make sense. I'm trying to think as what I haven't seen is the extent to which almonds are absorbed and digested compared to peanuts. Because you know peanuts are poorly digested. You know, and plants, you know, lots of plants are pretty smart. They've created ways for us to not be able to handle them. You know, that's plants, they protect themselves, you know.
I've heard that was the case with beans, potentially with some of them, at least it's a coating, or potentially the whole thing with gluten, that may be a method of trying to keep us from consuming it.
Yeah, like you start figuring out, it's like, I feel awful when I eat this. I'm not going to eat this anymore. You connect the dots, you know, and then you stop eating that and, you know, you don't disrupt things. And I mean, there's also situations too. It's not a bad thing for some seeds. I mean, seeds are very indigestible. Like flax seed will come right through you, like full seeds. Well, that's good because that's a way for plants to spread their seeds,
True. Okay, that
right? You
makes
eat some
sense.
seeds somewhere, you go someplace else. If you're an animal, especially humans, not so much, but then they poop, you know, a mile away. That helps that seed migrate across terrain. The animal is a carrier for the seed.
That's
Yeah.
interesting.
So yeah. So and even if you don't chew it all the way down, some of the seeds will survive and still be viable. So I don't know about almonds. I would presume so, to some degree, but I haven't. They'd have to do the actual study. And peanuts are just notorious for just making it through. I don't know too many people have that issue with almonds.
Yeah, you're right. You make a good point there.
Yeah, so who's to say?
All right. We got one more question we'll try to tackle. How are we doing? We're an hour plus in here on time. We could probably do this one a little bit quicker. This is from UC Summa. It says, question for both Scotts, doctor and coach. What nootropic ingredients have each of you found most effective in terms of noticeable cognitive effect? Separate question, have either of you noticed weird dreams as a result of any supplement use, nootropic, UGL, or otherwise? Man, I've had some weird dreams, that's for sure. But it hasn't been consistent. Nootropics, that's something. Now you said we talked a little bit about this before we went live. You haven't had a ton of experience, positive or negative, with them, have you?
I used NoPept when it first came out years ago. I played with NoPept and I tried several of the racetams and I just really didn't notice much. Bacopa Monnieri, I tried that, which is supposed to help with memory, but it takes a while to take effect. I never noticed anything for that. Ashwagandha, I does seem to help me. It's interesting because Nootropic is, you know, you see kind of different definitions as to what it is, and stimulants will have that effect too.
Yeah.
So,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
Caffeine could fall into that category. So ashwagandha is typically thought of as a an adaptogen, but it has those kinds of effects. And I've been using some ashwagandha and rhodiola rosea.
Oh, yeah.
Arctic
yeah.
root. And I think those are helpful. And the science supports. I think there's a study with nurses and another one with medical students using rhodiola rosea, showing improvement in some cognitive scores.
Okay.
When they were working during finals, that sort of thing for the medical students, and when they were doing late night shifts with the nurses.
Yeah.
So ashwagandha has been around for forever. A lot of people find that to be the case. What else have I tried?
What about L-tyrosine?
Yeah, I've used it with an ephedrine caffeine aspirin stack, or just ephedrine caffeine.
Yeah.
And that seems to, cause L-tyrosine is a precursor for the, for dopamine, norepinephrine, epinephrine, for the catecholamines.
Okay.
So it seems to potentiate the effects there. It seems to help, at least in like one rat study I recall, it seems to help with the appetite, reducing the anorectic effects of ephedrine. So it seemed to kind of boost it up a little bit and helped it work a tad.
I like it. That's one of my favorites, yeah.
You throw it in like your inter-workout? I've done that a lot when I've been dieting down. It seems to help.
I have, yeah. I've done that, or just taken it at just when I'm feeling like I could use a lift. And I also noticed that the nice thing about it with a lot of nootropics, I don't get spun out or strung out from it. I can still go to sleep at night. It's more like an anti-fatigue than it is an alert type thing, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean you're just feeding the biosynthesis of those catecholamines.
Yeah, yeah.
With you're just making sure there's enough starting material, but you're not gonna it's not like you're forcing there to be more catecholamine release at that nervous terminal or something like that. You're not putting in an exogenous substance that in and of itself is a stimulant.
Yeah.
You're just providing your body with the starting material for those neurotransmitters.
I found with NOPEP in the past, if I use too much of that, I get a headache from it. For some reason, some of them I get a headache from. Yeah, so I have to watch it with that one. I'm seeing more and more nootropics in pre-workouts now. I know that we have one of the sponsors from Advices, Forged Nutrition. They have like Alpha GPC as well as Huperzine A. Huperzine A is one of my favorites. I've got, of course, Azoth, which I'm actually like ironically wearing their shirt today, which was not planned. I've liked their stuff. I've got a spare bottle. If you'd be interested, Scott, I'd be up for sending it out to you if you want to try it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't I've tried a few. I've just never gotten much out of them. For some reason, who knows? Who knows why?
Yeah.
I don't know how amenable I really am to placebo effects. That's an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
You know, but never I was really looking forward to the NOPEPT.
Oh yeah.
When I used it way back, I was like, "Oh, this is going to be great." I've heard all these wonderful things. You know, I think its origins are in Russia.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah. So I was like, "Oh, this is going to be great." Nothing.
Yeah, nothing. I was using Cold War.
You can see. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think I tried. I had a stack of, and I just bought all the raws and made my own way back when.
Right.
With NOPEPT, Alpha GPC, phenylparacetam.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to think. I may even had. They've had some tyrosine in there, but didn't get much out of it. Like nothing really noticeable.
Hmm. I think I'm sensitive to that stuff. I do.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to some people that get a really good effect from nootropics, and because I've given away a lot of the Azoth that I've been given because it's more than I need, and so I figure, well, what's the best thing I can do as being sponsored by them? I could give my stuff away and let other people try it. Most of the people I've talked to have had good experiences. I've had a couple people that also felt nothing. And I had maybe two people that felt tired after they took it, which was weird. They're like, I just felt really tired and I wanted a nap. So it's rare, apparently, but it's not as across the board, I think, as nootropics, as, say, like taking Adderall I think that if you take Adderall, you're going to be stimulated. You know what I mean? Like those things are going to work. I think that there's a little bit more variance in response to these.
I did feel a little bit from modafinil, which is a precursor to modafinil.
Which one is it?
Modafinil.
Adrafinil. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you can get that. I found like one source. I was actually giving that to my dog Rusty
Oh, no kidding.
before he passed. Yeah, that was something for the canine cognitive dysfunction that
Okay.
seemed to help him. Yeah,
Okay.
it kind of made him. And I had, I don't know, like a bottle left over
Yeah.
after he passed. So, and I think I probably still have it. I've just used it a few times. I just don't think it wasn't that big of an effect, but I did notice something.
Now, was that, I believe adrafinil has a longer half-life than modafinil, if
I
I'm
can't
not,
remember.
okay. Because the thing
Yeah,
is, I
it's
have,
like a precursor. It's a prohormone, so or precursor to modafinil,
yeah, I
I
have
believe.
modafinil myself. Problem
Right.
is that if I use it, I have to take it at like 7 a.m. Otherwise, I won't be able to fall asleep at night. It works for such a
Wow.
long period.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And it's just so expensive too. You know, it's so expensive to take that stuff. So I know that
Yeah.
some of our listeners use it. I don't know. I feel like I like the idea of nootropics that are not drugs that aren't like I mean, it would be great to take Adderall every day. I feel like when I have taken it, I'm like, holy shit, I'm so productive. But I know myself, it probably wouldn't end there. You know, I'd keep taking it and then I'd need more, and so I stay
Yeah.
away.
You know, but you touched on a really interesting topic there of like, what is a drug? What is a nutraceutical? What is a drug? How important does it meet? Does it matter if something's quote unquote natural or not? If we're talking about like, is phenylparacetam a drug or not?
Well, here's
You
one of the
know?
things that I've, because I've talked to Prady about that, the guy who makes Azoth, and he would be able to tell me a lot better. Maybe, you know what, I'm supposed to talk to him again soon because I wanted to revisit his thoughts on nootropics because I know it's always evolving. But one of the things that he's thought about with nootropics are that they should be building you up versus depleting your resources. Versus like when you take Adderall, it's going to deplete your resources and require you to take more just to stay level. Versus the nootropics that he tries to get into are things that will build those resources up.
Yeah, kind of like an adaptogen would do. You have to look at the mechanism of action. I think we can get lost in the semantics. If you call something a drug, that doesn't mean that it's just an artificial man-made compound that binds to a receptor that normally we'd be binding an endogenously produced compound. So, you pick like, I mean, like a lot of drugs actually bind numerous compounds. If you like look in the like the physician's desk reference, it's a fucking nightmare. So you like look for like an antidepressant, or like we have like SSRIs, or name it. Just pick any drug if you get a hold of one. You can go buy. Sometimes you can find like old versions, and you just pick the drug and they'll say the mechanism of action is uncertain. And this is like it could be a drug that's been prescribed for decades to millions of people. And it seems to have the following actions. It inhibits serotonin reuptake. It stimulates dopamine release in this area of the brain in rats. It has this effect. It seems there could be a bunch, and the side effects, of course, would be like dozens in many cases. So a lot of drugs, we really they're engineered with a certain thought in mind, or they're based. It's like something like I've seen different numbers, but they're based on some sort of naturally occurring substance. And then they're a variation thereof, in some way, shape, or form. So, like things like aspirin and nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories, they kind of have their origins in white willow bark.
All right, or even like opium versus the synthetic, drugs that are available for pain,
Narcotic,
right?
yeah, exactly. So they start engineering those things, and then they say, like, okay, it's based on this idea. But it has, five or six other effects that we weren't really quite sure were going to happen necessarily. So what really constitutes a drug? Like, if it's man-made, does it make it a drug automatically? Probably. But if it's naturally occurring, does that ensure that it's not a drug?
Yeah, because
Is it
opium's
automatically
definitely still a drug,
prescriptable?
right?
Well, it can have drug-like effects. You just have to look at the mechanism of action. It's like it's really an artificial construct to say. this is a nutraceutical, this is a drug, this, you know, this is a pharmaceutical or whatever. Like, those are just words we're giving to things.
Yeah.
When we really don't know, like, the full plethora of physiological effects that these compounds have, like, in so many ways.
I know that, like, NOPEP was considered a drug all along, and now it's no longer available for supplement use. Like, it's
oh, really?
Yeah. Like, Brady had to take it out because he had it in originally. But yeah, like, I know that you're not supposed to sell NOPEP as a supplement anymore. So I'm sure that's even more of like a drug now, you know, than it used to be. Legal. I think people would define drugs by their legal state. You know, that would be one way for like a layman like myself to determine whether something was a drug or not, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it comes down to money in many cases. Something's a drug because the pharmaceutical industry okay. wants the label as a drug and they have control over its use.
Right.
So then we can, you know, feed it to physicians and stuff, blah, blah, blah. That's what makes that's probably the best definition of a drug is that which, you know, our pharmaceutical industry has labeled a drug.
Do you remember?
If they can figure out a way to market it and make money off it, well, then it's a drug.
Yes. Do you remember the Cheerios issue, the issue that Cheerios had with the government?
No.
They said on the cover of the box of the Cheerios, it said, you know, proven to lower fight cholesterol or something like that.
Oh, yeah, because it's made from oats, right.
And then from there, the government stepped in and said, whoa, you're making drug-like claims, and you're going to have to pull this. Otherwise, we're going to have to consider Cheerios a drug, and you're going to have to apply for something differently for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think they have like supports healthy blood cholesterol or something like that.
Yeah.
They like, still may be on there. Yeah.
They you like can reworded it.
Quaker Oats. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the thing too, have we talked about placebo effects?
We did, but it's probably been a while because you had the first time I ever heard you talk about it, it was not even on the show. You were on Geared Up, I believe.
Okay.
And we had talked about the study with D-ball.
Right.
Where it wasn't even D-ball, right?
Right.
And then there were some other ones, I think, with morphine.
Yeah. We came up, this came up on a podcast I did with Eric Helms that'll be out not too long from now.
Okay.
Dave McConey's podcast. I can't remember the name of his podcast. Anyway, it's a great podcast. He's had some phenomenal guests on there.
Yeah.
And we may have talked about this on the Mind Pump one, too. I can't recall, but. There's a guy, actually, he's a phenomenal author. His name's Ted Kapchuk. He's well known in the Asian medicine world because he wrote a book called The Web That Has No Weaver, which is probably the best layperson's introduction to Chinese medicine.
Okay.
And Chinese medicine, of course, you know, is a very difficult thing to study because if you want to come up like with a control, you use what they call kind of sham acupuncture where you needle someplace that's not considered a classical acupuncture point, but you still stuck a needle in somebody.
Okay.
So like it's really hard to like have controlled acupuncture studies. So placebo effects, you know, are really a big issue experimentally. And I presume that's why Kapchuk now has become a researcher looking into the underlying mechanisms of placebo effects. Hmm. And there's a really cool review. He's the third author. I can't remember the first one right now. I'm like, oh, that's the Ted Kapchuk. I know who that guy is. And they it came out in 2015, this review. And at that time, they had isolated in that review, or there were studies that they reviewed or looked at that had figured out about 28 different genes where polymorphisms or variation in those genes would discriminate between those who were more amenable to placebos and those who were not.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So the one that I remember is pretty a pretty well-known characterized gene is catecholomethyltransferase, COMT, which is involved with breaking down catecholamines like dopamine, which is involved with our reward system. So if you are someone who has low levels of COMT, or low activity COMT, you tend to be more likely to have placebo effects.
Okay.
And this is something that can be inhibited with drugs. Hmm. They had those 28 genes that were involved with the placebo effect, I believe 26 of the 28 were also the targets of drugs that were used, currently actively being used in the medical community. They're pharmaceuticals.
Okay.
So many of these pharmaceuticals are targeting genes that are involved with the placebo effect. So it's hard to know, is that drug having its effect, given whatever effect it's supposed to have, because of the drug's action or its intended action?
Yeah.
Or is it because of its action in mediating the activity of that gene related to the placebo effect? Is it effective as the drug? Basically, is it efficacious as a drug? Meaning, does its effectiveness come about because of the intended action of the drug? Meaning, it's an efficacious way of producing that medical outcome? Or is it having its effect because it's mediating a placebo effect?
Yeah.
So it's effective, but not quote unquote efficacious. And there can be people discriminate sometimes between those two terms. So one of the things that they brought forth, which I think was really cool in that review, is the idea that you could co-administer with drugs, other drugs, and maybe even like a cocktail of drugs that targets the genes known, like COMT, for instance, okay, and other genes known to mediate a placebo effect. So you've got the drug having the intended effect, whatever it may be, you know, inhibiting some particular enzyme or binding to some particular receptor or preventing reuptake of some neurotransmitter, whatever it may be. And then you have all the other, like the co-administered cocktail, which you call the placebo cocktail, that's targeting what they call the placebome.
Okay.
There's the human genome, and there's the metabolome, which is sort of all the metabolic enzymes in their entirety, like that's the universe of the metabolic enzymes, and the genome is the universe of the genes, and the placebome is the universe of all those of all the metabolic machinery involved with mediating the placebo effect.
Huh.
So you would have a placebome cocktail of drugs that would be co-administered with the drug to have its intended effect, and you could amplify the effect of drugs or supplements or what have you.
Right.
So, like vitamin E and quercetin both inhibit COMT.
Okay.
I don't know what doses you would need to use to have sort of a clinically significant effect, but you could start, like, this is something I can imagine, and maybe I'm creating the problem here and like divulging this idea to people who will get the quote unquote wrong idea and take advantage of it in a way that's not so savory, but you could spike supplements with other supplements that amplify a placebo effect,
yeah,
and make that supplement more effective, not because the ingredients in the supplement have the intended effect that you're advertising it for, simply because you've basically amplified the placebo effect,
right,
which goes along with the fact that you've got, like, you know, some gigantic, you know, muscular guy who doesn't ever use that supplement, but he's supposedly the result of that, and you've got some fake, you know, scientist in the white experimental coat, you know, with the pocket protector and the clipboard and all that kind of shit. So you do all those things to create the expectancies, and then you give a drug that increases supplements, or even drugs. Like, Lord knows we have supplements that are spiked with drugs.
Sure.
So you co-administer all those things to amplify the placebo effect at the same time. And who knows, you don't have to have anything in there that even works. You just create a giant placebo effect, which works.
Right.
As well as anything, pretty much.
Huh.
So the placebo effect's really awesome. It's phenomenal. And, you know, you may be someone who's part of what you're getting, aside from your brain chemistry.
I'm very susceptible to the placebo effect.
Yeah.
So I'll take it.
Right.
I wish it was the case with all drugs, because there's some things I'm very sensitive to, and then there's other things that I can't take, that don't process at all. Like they just don't work. So it's interesting,
yeah.
But there's certain types of drugs, everything related to, like, nootropics, Strattera, which is a drug that's a norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor. It's supposed to build up over a period of time. I can only handle like 5 milligrams of it, versus normal people would take 60, and they would take it for a month before they felt it. I'll take 5 to 10, and I feel it within a few hours.
Interesting.
At the same time, some blood pressure medications give me terrible side effects because they build up too quickly. So
yeah.
My doctor thinks it has something to do with like the P450 pathway and the way I want to do some testing, you know, on it.
Yeah.
That would be cool to find out. But I think it's something in how I process certain drugs. Another one, you know, you mentioned Yohimbine. I'm a poor metabolizer of Yohimbine. It'll stick around all day long in my body. So,
Yeah, you probably like the Yohimbine hydrolase is probably one you lack. That can be an issue for people. So you just don't break it down.
Okay.
Just the Yohimbine stays there. Yeah. So
Just shivering all day.
Oh yeah, that's nasty. Yeah, that's so fascinating. And that's the thing. These are drugs. You know, those things you're mentioning are all man-made. So it's not as if we've evolved in some way to handle those things as normal sort of contaminants or toxins that are coming in on a regular basis. Like if, you know, I don't know, let's say if like Yohimbine were a common contaminant, you can actually, there's obviously Yohimbine bark, you know, which I think it's found in South America somewhere, but you know, it's a very specific area of the world where you find that. It's not like it's ubiquitous. You find it in leafy greens or something like that. If it were found in leafy greens, chances are you wouldn't be alive if you couldn't metabolize that because your ancestors would have had a hard time dealing with that, and they, you know, eventually they would have croaked by accidentally taking in too much leafy greens at some point, or what have you. There would have just wouldn't you, you would have your ancestors would have figured out how to make it around that, or the people that are your ancestors would have had the enzymes involved with metabolizing Yohimbine if it were everywhere. But they don't.
Thankfully, thank God, Yohimbine isn't everywhere, or Yohimbine bark.
Yeah, it's just fascinating that we have so many of these variations, and it makes sense that, you know, a lot of people can't handle different drugs in that way. So.
Well, I say, you know what we should do? We should talk about training next time.
Okay.
I
All
would
right.
love to I would love to pick Dr. Scott's brain about an exercise or something. I don't know. We should come up with something. Maybe we should go to the listeners and see what they want to hear about. But it would be cool because then we could demonstrate with some video.
Yeah. Like pull from my Instagram, you mean,
Something like that, where because you
or have me do a demonstrate live.
well, we could use the video and play that on the live, so you can still sit here and commentate with me on it.
Okay.
And that would be fun, though. That would be good. So we should. I'll have to think of something. You think of something, and if the listeners think of something, it would be fun. We could make full use of this technology that we have here.
Okay. I'm looking to see if we have any good questions. We didn't get a lot of questions. People kind of chiming in. So, yeah, maybe next time we can field one good question
Okay, that sounds like a
too, if we
plan.
get a lot of people chiming in.
That sounds like
Yeah,
a
we might as
plan.
well reward those guys who are hardcore enough to spend their time watching us babble.
Yes, I agree. That sounds like a plan. We'll have to do some a little bit of reformatting.
Yeah, this is cool, man. I like this. This is
Cool.
fun.
Yeah, me too. This is good. This is good. I think we can probably develop this further, I think, you know?
Absolutely.
So,
All right.
what do you have going on today? What's happening with training?
I'm not training today.
Not
Just
training.
chilling. Yeah, my girlfriend Lainey was here this weekend. We
Oh,
trained a little
nice.
bit. I've got ton of stuff to do around the house. I got some sleep to catch up on. I got a bunch of cleaning to do too. These guys are like, it's a long. The house is kind of like it's. I can't wait. I've almost got my house back. I've got a kitchen now. It's awesome. Yeah, but we've been doing toilet swaps around the place. So they need to like they put in toilets, but they weren't able to put them in. So there's like grout all over the floor, and there's dirt, and the guys are kind of coming in and leaving like dirt trails every time they come in and out. So I have some cleaning to do, and just it's just a chill. This is a catch up, chill work day for me.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. What about you, man?
I will be training. I trained hams and glutes yesterday. I'm starting back at chest,
Course,
shoulders,
of
and
course.
triceps today. So I'm excited. It'll be
How are the
good.
glute gains coming along?
They're going really good. I got a progress picture, but I felt too abashed to post
Come on, put that shit up, man.
God, I'll text it to you personally.
I'm gonna post it if you send it to me. I'm posting that shit up. What are you wearing? Or do you have like a G-string? What's like? What are you?
I got the boxer briefs on, but you can see the shape is improving.
Okay.
I'm developing shape, so I'm happy about it. Yeah, it's like I said
Are you
before.
doing measurements?
No measurements, but I can
Hmm.
tell in how I feel and how my clothes fit.
Right.
And just in how I look, that they're coming along. So, but you're right.
Yeah.
I probably could do something with measurements. At the
Oh,
same
yeah.
time, though, I'm getting leaner now, and so I'm losing fat and gaining muscle. And I've never done measurements. I never have. It probably would be a really smart idea, though, wouldn't it, to have taken like an arm measurement even when I started out, and compare that to, a year later. But I never got into it. Never tried.
Yeah, Dante would have people do arm measurements, just like doing arm measurement. It's not a bad thing to do. Especially if someone's want if someone has a weak muscle group like calves or arms, or if it were glutes in your case, I would definitely like I have a lot of my female clients do just a glute circumference. Just because that's where they're gonna hold their fat. So it gives you an indicator of fat to some degree.
That makes sense, yeah.
I mean there's obviously a muscle and fat there. So if they're gaining some glute size, but like if you're getting leaner at the same time and your glute your hip circumference is going up, then you're getting gluticized.
This is true.
So
This is true. So, all right.
dude, you're gonna have to post it up. Like you're doing more. I mean, I don't follow bikini competitors, but you're doing more glute stuff than any guy I know by far. So
Every
we gotta see the
week.
glute gains, man.
Yeah, I know it's a lot of pressure to live up to, but that's why I got the MPA intra workout. I needed to get the carbs to make sure that I solidified the glute gains.
Right.
Yeah, but today's chest though, so that'll be fun. That'll be a good one.
Are you getting stronger on these glute exercises?
You know what? I'm actually using less weight than when I started because I think I'm getting
Good
better
shit.
form, I'm getting better
Okay.
activation, and
Yeah.
I'm able to contract the muscles better than I have ever been able to. So at first I really didn't feel the squeeze, at first it was just like a weak like hamstring back once said like my body's saying, "What the heck's going on here? How do we flex this? How do we move this weight?" And now it
Wow.
knows, now it
Yeah.
knows. So
Is your low back better now? You got past that injury?
yes, it is, and I've retweaked it a couple times. Every time I've tweaked it, I know it's been because of the glutes. But I'll tell you what, too. You know what fixes it? Training glutes. My lower
Yeah.
back feels healthier when after a glute workout. So I could go in with like some SI pain or some low back soreness. I train
Right.
glutes and I come out and my lower back feels better. So I wish I had that answer a long time ago because I think it really has been a key for me.
Are you doing reverse hypers?
No, I can't. They tear my back up still.
No shit.
Oh yeah, that's like a surefire method to never step
Okay.
foot in the gym again for like the next month. So
Wow.
I can't do reverse hypers.
Is it the lumbar flexion that causes the issue?
Yeah, that
Interesting.
movement, it'll destroy me instantly. Like no weight.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's weird, but.
Can we do we? I'm sure I've asked this before. What's the diagnosis? Do you have bulges there, or
There was
what's going on in your
nothing
lumbar
showed
spine?
up in my when I had an MRI, but that was a long time ago. I haven't had an MRI in a long time. But this
Yeah.
is we're going way off. We're let's close the show
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. It's. I'm just fascinated that like, because reverse hypers is a cure-all for many people
That's what I've
for low
heard.
back issues.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, because you got traction on the spine, so you're not compressing, so it. It can help with things a good bit, but that's interesting. Your low back's interesting, man. You got a fascinating stuff going on down
So
there.
I'm feeling positive though. It's
Yeah.
coming along better than ever. So
You got your individual solution.
yes. I'm glad we could
Yeah.
do this. Thanks for joining me on video today, Scott. This is great.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, guys, for another episode of Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson, I'm Scott McNally. Go to fortitudetraining.net and byobbcoach.com. You can check out Dr. Scott's books there. Guys, we will see you soon.
Cool. Thank you.
You
Later.
usually say adios.
See, I mixed it up a little today.
All right, we are going to end this thing.